You're listening to a podcast from the BMJ.
Welcome to the BMJ podcast. This week we'll find out how sleep is a more important health commodity than you may think.
We find that later on in adults, a lack of sleep or short duration of sleep is likely to be associated prospectively as a potential cause to a number of consequences also linked to obesity.
Now it's time to sleep. Last week, we heard about a potential link between sleep and BMI and body fat composition in children. The editorialist who wrote alongside that research paper is Francesco Capuccio from the University of Warwick, and he joins me on the phone now. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome.
In your editorial, you talk about this sort of change in sleep patterns that are going on in modern society. Could you expound on that slightly?
Yes. Sleep keeps us busy for a third of our life and has been since the early days of evolution. In very recent time, we have changed dramatically our pattern, which was originally regulated by the day-night cycle, so by the presence of light, whereas perhaps in the last 150 years, we have dramatically changed sleep and wakefulness, particularly in the last 60 to 70 years, the American population has lost on average about in excess of 2 hours per night, from just over 9 hours per night to just under 7 hours per night. But if we look at the extremes, for instance, we say how many people would sleep less than 5 hours per night, and we'll come back to this magic number later, we find that in excess of 20% of the population, one in five, do regularly sleep less than 5 hours per night. And that might constitute a long-term problem in terms of ill health.
Absolutely. And you talk about some of the links between ill health and lack of sleep. And it's not just the BMI stuff we were talking about before, is it?
Yes, obviously the BMI story in children is very important in highlighting what is becoming an epidemic. We find that later on in adults, a lack of sleep or shorter duration of sleep is likely to be associated prospectively as a potential cause to a number of consequences also linked to obesity. Type 2 diabetes, for instance, far more common in people who sleep less than 5 hours per night. The development of high blood pressure and the obvious consequences you can predict, like incidence of stroke, incidence of coronary heart disease. And we find also the total mortality is indeed increased in people who regularly sleep less than 5 hours per night. In other words, it's more likely that you die prematurely.
So that 5 hours is quite an important cutoff, it seems.
Yes, I think unlike things like cholesterol and blood pressure, where there is a really graded linear relationship with risk, for sleep we find an atypical situation or a different situation where we have what we call a U-shaped curve. We identify a sort of margin between 6 and 8 hours per night, where there is no particular association with long-term risks. But if we go below five, with a threshold, we find an increased risk of developing all these conditions I mentioned.
Another change to the sleep cycle that's gone on is siestas that used to be common throughout much of the world, and I believe are sort of disappearing at the moment. Has the idea of having a nap in the afternoon, catching up on some extra sleep that way, has the disappearance of that made a difference to people's health?
Yes, this is a very, very important issue. When we talk about duration of sleep, we tend to associate to one night sleep in a continuum. That may not be the case where when we go into more subtle studies of the sleep structure, we have different phases of sleep. We have some very, very deep sleep, a very consolidating phase of sleep. And sometimes you can have fewer hours during the night, but you can catch up with naps, which in some countries in the past was called siesta, was very structured. I think we have lost that. Even Spain very recently has lost formally the structured siesta, which is part of their daily life. And this is a precious society and the speed with which their economy has to work and progress. So that's the clear example. Nevertheless, napping is a very important mechanism to compensate for particularly the acute effects of sleeplessness. It's less clear at the moment whether these are they have any effect on long-term ill health, which is really the aspect we are most interested in, and whether any erosion of that commodity we have may constitute a risk to our long-term health. And that is a very early stage of research, in fact. And epidemiology is starting providing this, but in terms of mechanisms, as you can imagine, to transform observational studies into randomized clinical trials, a long-term outcome, there is a long way to go. But nevertheless, I think it's very, very important to create a picture of contributing factors to the epidemic over centuries.
Mm, absolutely. So this is an emerging field, this research. And
indeed it is, yes.
So I suppose, you know, for our listeners who are quite possibly GPs or something, they may have been having patients presented to them with acute sleep problems, insomnia. But do you think they need to be much more aware of a chronic lack of sleep, a lack of sleep that their patients perhaps don't even realise is going on?
Indeed, I think this is a very, very important issue you're touching, and I think it would be important to highlight that in general, in primary care, in their training, acute sleep problems, as you call insomnia, are clearly studied, and they're fully aware of what they mean. What is less known, as you highlight, is that even subtle changes in sleep patterns may be such that individuals may not report voluntarily to GPs, could constitute a risk for their future health. And in fact, I'll give an example. We do accept now as a common practice when we consult with patients of all kinds to ask whether they smoke, whether they take any exercise on a regular basis, whether they add salt to food. No one has ever constructed into this very simple screening how long they sleep on average and how well they do sleep. It is important that at this stage we do not have an effective treatment. Even if you find out somebody sleeps less than they should, what do you do with it?
Maybe in the future we'll see GP-prescribed lie-ins or something. Professor Carpiccio, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you very much.
And Francesca's editorial can be found on bmj.com.